Welcome to On DOD on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Now, your host, Jared Serbu.
Thanks for listening to On DOD this week. I'm Jared Serbu. On this week's show, we say goodbye for now to a very familiar name in the world of defense acquisition, Dick Ginman, DOD's Director for Defense Procurement and Acquisition Policy. He's joined us several times to talk about various aspects of DOD contracting. This will be our last visit. He's retiring from government after more than 40 years in the defense procurement business, including 30 years in the Navy, where he retired as a Rear Admiral in the Supply Corps. He served in the Procurement Policy Office as a top civil servant since 2007, including most recently as its director. On the program this time, rather than drilling down into any particular topic, we wanted to ask Ginman to step back and reflect on what's changed and what's stayed the same in defense acquisition during his career. We spoke in his office at the Pentagon 3 days before his retirement.
Well, sir, first, thanks for doing this. Congratulations on your retirement. Appreciate you talking with us one last time before you head out later this week. And I definitely want to give you ample time to talk about what you yourself view as success and progress and accomplishments over the past 7 years you've been back in the department. But let me start with some recent news. And I think one of the lesser noticed parts of the GAO high risk update that came out a couple weeks ago was on DOD contract management. Still as a broad area on the list as a topic, but one of the four subcategories, contracting techniques and approaches, came off the list this year. Fewer undefinitized contracts, less reliance on time and materials, better oversight of the process overall, I think is a reasonable way to sum up what GAO found. Assuming you agree with GAO that you've made progress, what from your perspective has let that happen?
Well, I think for the four areas that are there under contract management, all of them, we've had a concerted effort for years. Contract management's been on the GAO high risk list since the second year it was out. I suspect contract management will remain on the high-risk list forever. There are 60-some-odd elements that have been identified as part of the high risk. So 56 of them, and those numbers are not exact, but it's in that ballpark. We've worked off 56, so there are four left. So we were excited and very pleased the GAO took off the one, with the three left. And we'll continue to focus on those three areas and broadly on the subject of contract management. But it's a journey. It's not, gee whiz, there's this just one thing. But I think DCMA manages well over $1 trillion in contracts. To not think we don't have issues in contract management somewhere within the department, is just a mistake in view. So we're always going to be working on contract management. And I think the whole issue with Mr. Kendall and better buying power, it's about doing a better job and thinking it through. So we are excited that GAO decided to take the one off. We had hoped that services would have come off as well because we think we've made significant strides there. And hopefully next year we'll see services come off the list.
So let's stick with services. What do you see as the remaining work to be done to hopefully get you there? And we should back up a little. Talk about some of the progress that you think you have made in services that led you to believe that you might get off this year.
Well, services were identified in Better Buying Power, what's now called 1.0, but the initial Better Buying Power services were identified as an issue. Because it was, we made clear to leadership that more than 50% of our spend was associated with services. I think from the start of Better Buying Power in 2010 to where we are today, Mr. Estevez has been identified as the senior service manager. We've identified all of the functional domain experts. We are close, I hesitate to give you a date, but close to actually issuing the instruction that will place Appendix 9 of 5002 and will provide the detailed guidance for it. I think each of the three services and the Fourth Estate have made substantive progress. The challenge in services is unlike major weapons acquisition, where we know exactly who the requiring activity is, we know exactly what the requirements are and how to do it. We have the engineers and the capabilities to write the specs. When we're dealing with services, a broad perspective of the services, are by people who are not part of the acquisition community, the 150,000 people identified in the acquisition community. You have services for the operating organizations. You know, we have broad level of services. We have advisory and assistance services. You know, training people to write statements of work, and how do we go through that? We establish what we call the service acquisition workshops at DAU to provide people help to do that. You know, we're working on how we put templates together for services, how to put quality assurance plans together. It's not just enough to get to the contract. It's the management of the contract afterwards and who's going to do that. That's not a task that DCMA does. I mean, so now what we're asking is how do we train and develop the crew of people that are actually managing the services contracts? What are the metrics? What's the quality assurance plan? All of that. I think from where we were in 2010 when we started this voyage, you know, with Ken Brennan's leadership, you know, working for Mr. Estevez and for me, Ken's made great strides with the team and with the services and with the Fourth Estate. There's just a long journey to go as we get to the understanding of how to manage service contracts and where we go. Because it's beyond just the business of what's under Mr. Kendall, and it literally includes the entire military and the entire civilian workforce that we have out there and how we use contractors.
This is a slightly different point that probably has less to do with the actual acquisition of services, but I think one of the knocks from GAO has been that the department can't seem to get to a consistently reliable headcount of the number of contractor personnel throughout the department. Is there some disagreement about whether or not that is an important, useful management tool?
Well, so have you ever bought a house? You buy a house, do you really care how many contractors were actually working on building a house? If you have a lawn mowing service, do you care whether you have five people who do it in an hour or one person who does it in 5 hours? To me, the number of people that are actually tasked to do it, it is interesting. What I want to know is, did I receive the service? So we contract for communication services. Is it important to me to know how many people at the major telecommunication companies are actually working on that contract? What I want to know is, did I get the bandwidth that I asked for? Did I get the quality that I asked for? I'm not interested in it. The law requires us to keep track of contractors in the service world. We've implemented or are in the process of implementing a system called ECMRA for contractors to report. The Army's been doing it probably for 6 or 7 years now. The Air Force and the Navy are picking it up, and we're going there. In some instances, it's very helpful. For instance, you know, when you're in a contingency contracting environment, I really need to know exactly how many contractors I got. I need to know where they are. I mean, so in some instances, it's really important to understand. In others, less so.
Understood. So back to the GAO high risk list. One of the factors they cited in partially taking off contract management was sustained leadership commitment. And I got the bumper sticker that this whole acquisition business is a team sport. But specifically from the perspective of a leader in this business, what do you think the department has done right to communicate to the workforce that the things they should be doing?
That actual discussion with GAO wrapped around what we call the Business Senior Integration Group, SIGs, Business SIG, that is chaired by Mr. Kendall and meets on it's at least a once a month basis, and it may be an every 3 week basis, I'm not sure, where those issues are repetitively discussed and gone through under Mr. Kendall's leadership, and we address a broad spectrum of issues. And it, you know, to what the GAO wanted to see was, do we have sustained senior commitment that we're going to continue to focus on how we manage and oversight that? I think more broadly, your question was a broader one. I mean, what the GAO was looking at when they made that decision was expressly the business SIG, the role it plays. Do we discuss it, and were those issued? And the answers to those were yes, mm-hmm. which is why I think they agreed to take it off the high risk list. The broader issue is the instruction that is going to come out that will be, that will cover services broadly. The whole effort of what we're doing and the culture we're trying to put in place. Similarly in the contingency contracting world, it's about managing contractors on the battlefield. You know, Dr. Carter in his recent, in his speech that he just did, recognized the DoD workforce to be military, civil servants, and contractors. And that's true.
That's Dick Ginman, the outgoing director of Defense Procurement and Acquisition Policy. This is our exit interview, recorded just a few days before his February 27th retirement from government service. We'll come back and talk more about his 40-plus years in the defense acquisition business after a short break. This is On DoD on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Servino. Back on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM, this is On DoD. I'm Jared Serbu. We're talking for one last time with Dick Ginman, DoD's Director for Defense Procurement and Acquisition Policy. He's retiring from government after a more than 40-year career. We asked him to share his views on the progress he's seen in DoD acquisition over the past 8 years he served in the DPAP office. Before the break, we discussed GAO's views on that. In its update of the high-risk list earlier in the month, it partially removed one long-standing area of concern, DoD contract management. GAO credited some of the work DoD's done under the Better Buying Power initiatives, which were started in 2010 by Dr. Ash Carter, then the Undersecretary for Acquisition, Logistics, and Technology. Back to our conversation with Dick Ginman.
Back to Dr. Carter. This is almost a dumb question because you're not going to say anything bad about the Secretary of Defense, obviously. But does it matter in terms of inculcating Better Buying Power 1.0, 2.0, 3.0 that the father of the whole effort is now the Secretary of Defense?
I mean, I'm not going to get into what the Deputy Secretary or what Secretary of Defense is going to do or not do. But sure. I mean, Dr. Carter has served in policy. He's served in AT&L. He's been the Deputy Secretary. He understands extremely well how this department is wired and how it works. So having the secretary really understand well the department and how it's put together, I think that's a huge plus for the entire department's workforce, not just AT&L.
I'd like you to think big picture for a second in terms of good things that have happened in DoD.
I think that question you just asked was big picture.
That was big picture, and you gave a short answer. So let's work for a longer answer. So from your perspective, over the last 7 years you've been back in the building as a civil servant,
eight years. Eight plus.
I started us off with GAO, your turn. What are you most proud of in terms of either leadership accomplishments or the broader acquisition workforce accomplishments, general progress and acquisition improvement over that time?
So, I mean, at the risk of excluding people that I should not, the things that immediately, we've discussed a couple of them. From the 2007 Gansler Commission report on contingency contracting to where we are today, we've made huge progress. I mean, it's been a team sport. All of this stuff is a team sport. We now have what's called the OCS FCIB, which is actually the meeting I have immediately following this. That leads the effort with where have we been and where are we getting to. The whole issue associated with services and the progresses we have made in managing services. I think first and foremost, Dr. Carter and Mr. Kendall both, their number one priority was support to the warfighter. I think the progress we've made, the warfighter SIG that Dr. Carter created that Mr. Kendall now leads with a focus on how do we get support to the warfighter and from where we were 7 or 8 years ago to where we are today and how we perceive that and how we make sure that we're getting the right things at the right time in the right place. I mean, we've made huge areas. The whole area of data and data transparency, I got assigned by the president to chair the Government Accountability and Transparency Board, which is outside the Department of Defense responsibility. But the whole issue of how we get the right data, if you go to Mr. Kendall's office, there's a little plaque that says, "In God We Trust, All Others Bring Data." It's the how do we get so that we can make appropriate decisions based on real data. And Mr. Kendall's now put out two annual reports, with metrics associated with it. We're getting better and better and better at actually managing data. The whole issue of getting to auditability. And an audible of accounting statements. It's can I track the transaction, from when it was in an appropriation to when it shows up in the general ledger as a dollar out the door to Treasury. and go all the way through. You know, when somebody says, show me how that chair, what was, you know, where's the receipt that it came from? What contract was it on? Whose property book is it on? You know, where was the appropriation it came from? The ability to do that. We've made great strides over the course of the last 4 or 5 years. And being able to actually answer those kinds of questions and answer them quickly. We have a long way to go, but broadly, those are the kinds of things you know, that get there. It would be an error on my part. I mean, just the whole implementation of rulemaking, you know, that's done by the DAR Council, you know, which is under my responsibility. The way that we go through doing that and the quality. GAO just came in and did a review of our use of interim rules and had no recommendations and actually said, gee whiz, you look great. I mean, that's a huge testament, you know, to the DAR Council. And then just broadly, all of the policy issues, our international contracting issues, you know, reciprocal agreements, the team that works for me has done a really, really great job over the last 8 years that I've been here. You know, under Shay Assad's leadership for the first 4.5 years and my leadership since, I guess, 2011. So there are a lot of neat things that have been done.
That's a great summary. Can I go back to data transparency and especially the two reports you mentioned that Mr. Kendall has put out? What are some of the specific ways that you see that helping you manage better on a day-to-day basis? I've kind of thought of those reports as sort of guideposts about how to change policy, maybe, you know, guideposts toward future acquisition reform. How do they actually help you run the acquisition system better on a day-to-day basis if they do?
So, hopefully this is consistent with what Mr. Kendall has said. I mean, the first report was interesting. In the second report, it started to become clear as we got better and better at collecting the data, for one express example, that fixed price incentive firm contracts really do, and cost plus incentive fee contracts really do work, that those incentives wind up with better outcomes than we could see it. So as a result, you've seen a move. I mean, we said in the September 2010 letter that Dr. Carter signed out in Better Buying Power, encouraged that move, but it's more of a move to use FPIF and CPIF contracts. I think Mr. Kendall was convinced when the second report came out, and you could actually look at that data. Hopefully, as the third one comes out, we're going to, you know, Mr. Kendall's going to expand again what is the level of data that we're looking at. As we become more sophisticated with the level of data that we have, with the quality of the data we have, we'll do a better and better job. I think another place where you have seen it, Andre Gudger, as the director of the Office of Small Business Policy, last year was the first year, I mean, we've made our small business goal in a long, long time. Andre's approach was looking at the data. We're starting to focus on competition using the same approach that Andre used, in the small business on competition and what are we getting to? Where are we going? How are we doing it? I think we will make much, much better decisions as we become data driven. Attempt again in the services area. It's attempting to do the same thing. Do we really understand where our spend is? We budget with object class on one side, but we expend data on the other by product service code. I mean, so between the comptroller and AT&L, we've come to agreement on the cross-reference list of how I take product service codes and tie it back to object class. As we roll that out and get better and understand it, we'll have a much, much better understanding, which in part ties back to your opening question with contractors. How do I really spend my O&M money? It's I budget here and I expend here. How do I put them together so I really do understand how I am spending my money and where I'm going?
Is that the same idea behind, I think it's the quarterly competition reports that you're publishing now?
Oh, I love data. I grew up, that which you inspect gets results and that which you ignore tends to get forgotten. So I'm a big fan of checklists, and I'm a big fan of data reports. So we have a variety of reports that come out either monthly or quarterly, that go out and say, here's how you're doing. You know, I mean, if it's there, then people will pay attention to it.
Correct me if I've got the dates wrong, but I think you've been in this business since roughly 1973, most of that in uniform on the Navy side. Over that period of time, again, big question, what's different
What's consistent? What stayed the same?
Well, so it's an interesting question. I guess it must have been July of 1973 as a Lieutenant JG walked through the doors of the Naval Ordnance Systems Command, which is now part of the Naval Sea Systems Command. I spent a month at Fort Lee, Virginia, learning the Armed Service Procurement Regulation, which is now more commonly known as the Federal Acquisition Regulation and the Defense Federal Acquisition Regulation Supplement, the FAR and the DFARS. Shay and I went back and said that the two of us, I mean, Shay relieved me 2 years later in that job, both thought that that 1 month we spent at Fort Lee learning the ASPR was probably some of the best training that we've ever had and sticks with us today. We restarted what's now called CON 090, where all introductory contracting officers, again, go to Fort Lee for a month to learn it. The interesting thing to me is at the end of the day, to be candid with you, there's not a lot different. The three things that make federal contracting different than commercial contracting is one, I'm required to compete. Commercial industry is not required to compete. You can go where you want, when you want, and to whom you want. I'm required to compete. Two, I'm required to tell everybody exactly how I'm going to run the competition, and then I have to follow it. And then third, you have this right to protest. All right. So those three things basically have been in place since 1947 with the passage of the Armed Service Procurement Act. Yes, we did Fast and Fair. Yes, we did CICA. CICA took us from 17 DNFs to determine exemptions from open competition to 7. I can find all 17 of them in CICA. The basic underlying methodology of how we go through this. To quote Better Buying Power 2.0, the bumper sticker, it was a guide to help you think. The basic underlying structure of how we do our job, just the basics really have not changed that much. It's do you understand what you're buying? Have you put a plan in place? Have you thought about that plan? Are you executing that plan? And do you document it? And if you can do that, you'll do just fine. Every NDA comes out, it's got some new twist. I have Berry Amendment, I've got specialty metals, I've got, solar photovoltaic cells. We have all of the, the socioeconomic programs, recent executive orders, trafficking in persons, all those things come to bear. But the basics of how we do the underlying job really have not changed much.
Dick Ginman is the Director for Defense Procurement and Acquisition Policy. At least as we sit down to record this show, we spoke in his office at the Pentagon just a few days before his retirement. We'll continue our talk after another quick break on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. This is On DoD. I'm Jared Servin.
Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Back on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM, this is On DoD. I'm Jared Serbu. Let's get back to our exit interview with Dick Ginman, who's joined us on the program several times before as DoD's Director for Defense Acquisition and Procurement Policy. This is our last visit with him, at least in that capacity. He's retiring from government after more than 40 years in the defense procurement business, including 30 as a Navy officer and the last 8 in the senior executive service.
Over that period of time that you've been in this business, as you allude to, you've seen a lot of acquisition reforms come and go. And I think one of the points Mr. Kendall has made, I'm paraphrasing here, in conjunction with the release of these two data reports we've been talking about, is it doesn't seem like a whole lot of difference has been made, good or bad, from past reform efforts. So as acquisition reform is in the air again this year, how much concern is there that Congress would do something from the department's perspective that's unhelpful? Vice, how much do you think everybody is on the same page that we need to tackle this incrementally, reduce unnecessary burdens? Is everybody basically there in a more cooperative spirit than we have been in the past?
So I'm going to answer a different question first, then I'll try and answer that one.
Sure.
I read this recently, and I don't know whether it's how true it is, but since 1947, there have been something like 150 reports on acquisition reform. Yeah. If you do the math, it's about two every year. We've been reforming acquisition forever. And frankly, I think we are going to continue to reform acquisition forever. We're always going to be looking for how do we do a better job. If you go into Mr. Kendall's conference room, on their wall are two placards, and they have the eight basic findings from the 1971 Packard Commission report. There is a, with the exception of one, which talks to total package procurement, they're as applicable today as they were when they were written in 1947. Now, to the question you asked, I think everybody's on the same page. I mean, I think what Congress is attempting to do, I think what Mr. Kendall's attempting to do, I think there's great synergy. In the world that I live in, you know, from just an acquisition, you know, from a contracting perspective, you know, unless you're going to fool with the requirement to compete, the requirement to be transparent and tell you how to do it, and the requirement, you know, to allow for a protest, none of which I think should be touched, right? Then the basic process that we go through, I don't think is going to change. Are there opportunities to improve the process? Sure, there are opportunities. Do I think there's a huge one that's going to make a phenomenal difference? No. But to the broader issue of acquisition, in the rewrite of 5002, it was stunning. I think there's an appendix that lists every single law that's done. I think since Goldwater Nichols, 1986, every NDA has added. Well, it's time to go back and reset the bar. And put some, you know, get back and reset it so that we don't have all of those individual tweaks. It's getting really, really hard. So I'm really encouraged. I mean, I think a lot of good will come out of what people are doing. I'm hopeful that we'll see something that will be, a substantive change. You know, that the department has sent a number of recommendations over to the Hill to consider. And certainly the Hill has some of their own. So I'm encouraged. That I think we'll see some good come out of this focus. Everybody appears to be aligned, you know, reasonably aligned in one direction with where they're trying to go and what they're trying to do. So hopefully we'll get something of value.
I think one of the other major things that's happened since you've been back in the building is a real focus on the acquisition workforce, including the creation of the Defense Acquisition Workforce Development Fund. You want to take us through what you think progress has been there in terms of professionalizing that workforce, not just building it up numerically, but providing some of, as you said earlier, the fundamental foundational training that you learned back in 1973.
So, I think we've always had a professional workforce. I mean, there are an awful lot of, I mean, articles and opinions that you read that I'm not going to use that phrase, that we could be a whole lot better than we are. I mean, I think we have a pretty professional workforce. And they're pretty good at what they're doing. If I were going to pick the area that I think, you know, that we got away from was how to price contracts, and how to go do that. And with FASA and FARA back in the 90s, and that we were going to buy like a commercial marketplace and the price was going to be set out in the commercial marketplace. A lot of what we buy is just, I mean, we do about $60 billion of commercial purchasing a year, but that leaves me $240 billion, or from last year's at $285, you know, it leaves me $225 billion that wasn't commercial, and I need the ability to price. And I mean, so over the course of the last 3 or 4 years, we've revamped all of the pricing courses at DAU with how we structure it. When I went through, in 73, 4, and 5, when I started out as a contracting intern, I actually had to take a math test before you were allowed into some of the pricing courses. We're going back to that level of rigor of what is it, but to put back into the whole pricing community. To be candid, numbers matter. Both DCMA and DCAA over the course of the last 4 or 5 years have had substantial plus-ups in the number and the people. And I hope as we go through, you know, as we're spending less money, you know, and as we continue to downsize, that in fact we will not take those organizations back to where they were, and that they'll have some level of protection. At the end of the day, putting contracts in place is easy. It's the management of the contracts that's hard. And one, just having the data to get there, but the day in, day out management of contracts. Am I paying appropriate costs? Who's doing the oversight? Am I getting what I called for? DCA and DCMA have had significant roles in that. So if I were going to pick, I think numbers do count. I think we made substantive strides in all of the services, but especially in DCMA and DCA. And then I think just the professionalism on and the focus on pricing and the reinstallation or the reincarnation, I guess, of a basic course that we got everybody through so we have a basic understanding, I think are all highlights that DAWEA helped us get to. The other big one was we did a competency assessment 4 years ago, I think now, within the contracting workforce, and that gave us a lot of insight into what the actual capabilities were from a junior, middle grade, and senior. We just redid it. And we're working through trying to understand what the outcome and results of that are. So I think this continued focus on the workforce. But by far and away, the most important thing we do is the focus on the workforce.
On the competency assessments, GAO gave you guys credit for that. What they did find, though, is that the department doesn't have a clear picture numerically of how large the acquisition workforce ideally should be to accomplish what you need to accomplish. Are we back to another numbers don't necessarily matter question, or what's your perspective on that?
Well, I mean, what's the right number of people you need? That's a really tough question. Since 1979, when I was actually in charge of a purchasing shop, been trying to work through how do you measure productivity in a contracting environment or an acquisition environment. There's certainly with the president's second term management agenda, a major focus on benchmarking. Some of the benchmarks are trying to look at, what is the productivity. The difficulty with doing that is it's you really got to be talking about organizations that are similar in nature. As an example, the president's benchmarking. We take DCMA out of the equation when we do all of the charts, because when you look at the percentages, DCMA is like 50 times greater from a inefficient organization when you do the metrics. But the reason for it is, one, DCMA's spend, which is what we're measuring, is very small, but they have all of the contracting officers that administer contracts. So you take all of that and divide it, you get a bizarre number. So you can't take a contract administration organization and use the metric that you're going to use for a small purchase buying shop. Similarly, you can't take that metric, for the organization that buys ships or buys airplanes or buys tanks and say, I'm going to compare. If you're going to get those kinds of metrics to work, you got to get two buying organizations or two acquisition organizations that are basically doing very similar type tasks and compare those. I mean, so we're from my standpoint, trying to do it DOD-wide is just tough. The next closest major defense or major federal activity does about 24 billion or 22 billion is the most. And last year we were at 285. So telling me I can compare DOD to another federal agency, I can't do that. Within the services, if the services can break it down and get to levels where the organizations are looking, I think there's some possibility there. But I think you got to be really, really careful when you say, what's the right number? Well, it depends. What am I trying to do? What's the skill set I need? Am I in the front end, high end research, where I'm in a lab environment? Or am I producing something that, I'm on the 20th lot of? Or am I getting the grass mowed? How many people do I need? It depends.
And back to the point about protecting the size that you have built up. There's, of course, a directive to reduce headquarters staffs by 20%. Is your workforce considered part of that overhead, or are they protected in some way?
Oh, well, clearly my office is part of that.
But the broader acquisition?
The broader acquisition that's out in the field, no, I don't believe so. But I'm probably not the right person to ask that question of either.
Okay, fair enough.
That's Dick Ginman, the Director of Defense Procurement and Acquisition Policy, speaking to us in his Pentagon office just a few days before his retirement. As one of his last official duties, he just presented DOD's first annual Dick Ginman Award for Contingency Contracting. We'll talk more about that when we come back on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. This is On DOD. I'm Jared Servin. Back on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM, this is On DOD. I'm Jared Serbu. One more segment with Dick Ginman, the Director of Defense Procurement and Acquisition Policy at DOD. This is our exit interview. We spoke just a few days before his retirement, capping 8 years in the senior executive service and 30 as a Naval Supply Corps officer before that.
We've talked about some of the things that you think have gone well over the past 8 years that you've been back in the building. Everyone knows that these jobs, you know, most of your time is spoken for. Are there things that you wish that you had more time to work on, or things that you feel like, gosh, I wish I could have made more progress in this area?
It's going to be the same list.
Yeah.
OCS, managing contractors on the battlefield, moving that ball further down the path. I would have liked to have made more progress. I think we've made phenomenal progress. I'd like to be at the end game, where we know how to do it. We're not going to have any mistakes. Gee whiz, we're going to get there. It's a journey. Data integrity, the ability to get to an audited financial statement. So any auditor that walks through the door and says, show me for that Humvee, the appropriation, the receipt, the contract, the payment, just being able to, I can give it to you right now. All I got to do is hit a couple of buttons and boom, here it is. Just the ability to do that across the broad spectrum. Getting to requirements, this whole issue with services how do we actually manage the service spend, who's doing it, where it's going, it would have been really nice to have made more progress than we've had. But we've made a huge amount of progress. So it's the same set. At the end of the day, it gets back to our number one priority, it's support the warfighter. Ensuring that we always got the product to the warfighter when the warfighter actually needed it. I think we're successful in that a lot. But to be successful 100% of the time would be nirvana to get out there. The things to get there. And then I guess the final one is just the professionalism of the workforce. Having more time to mentor individual contracting officers, having more time to actually work with program staffs with how they go through doing that. How do you improve the quality of the acquisition workforce? How do we lift them up to the next level? I think from 1947, to present, you cannot argue with the fact that we've got the best military in the world. So we've clearly been doing a lot right. We're going to continue to do a lot right. Can I do it better?
In our last couple minutes, interestingly, the way that we found out that you were leaving this job eventually was when your partner, Shay Assad, announced the new Dick Ginman Contingency Contracting Award, which will now be awarded every year. The language in the letter at the time said it was in honor of former DPAP director Dick Ginman, but that was obviously prospective language back then. But I think you've just presented the first award, unless I'm wrong. You want to talk a little bit about the recipient there and maybe what he did and how he was chosen?
Sure. The recipient was a guy by the name of Adam Goldstein, who, interestingly enough, is now with the Department of Agriculture. I went up with Rear Admiral Kotsia, who's my principal deputy, but also the deputy director for contingency contracting and the entire contingency contracting team, and a number of people that had actually worked with Adam from the Air Force and from the Army, and we went up to Maryland to the Agricultural Center with his leadership and presented the award to him. We actually had the contracting command in Kabul was on the line for the ceremony. I'm glad that it's not a in memoriam award, but it was neat. Adam had done a phenomenal job for about 18 months altogether, working in Kabul in Afghanistan and supporting the warfighter in theater. It was nice to go up and recognize an individual.
fair to say we have a lot more Adam Goldsteins in the workforce now?
There are a lot of deserving people that could have easily received the award.
So your last day is a couple days from now. Any future plans you want to talk about?
Oh, well, I hope to be a special government employee. That's got a ring to it. And I'll continue to do peer reviews, if asked. I spend my day at the 50,000 foot strategic level. The peer review is an opportunity to actually sit down with a contracting officer and a program manager that has real money and has a real product to actually deliver. And I am back to the mentoring capability to actually work with them to make the acquisition a better deal. So I hopefully will continue to be able to do that. And other than that, I'm going to do volunteer work.
Mr. Jinman, thanks so much. Doing this. Appreciate you talking with us one last time.
It's been a pleasure.
Good luck to you.
Dick Jinman, DOD's Director of Defense Procurement and Acquisition Policy, speaking to us just before his February 27th retirement. The last eight in the SES within DPAP, a handful in private industry, and 30 more as a Navy Supply Corps officer. We thank him for his service and for spending time with us on various defense procurement topics over the years. That's going to do it for this week's edition of On DOD. Thanks, as always, for listening. I'm Jared Serbio. So long.
You've been listening to On DOD with Federal News Radio DOD reporter Jared Serbu. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. On DOD, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.